Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in today. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and neighbor Pat Schlerbaum. And because KHOI is the heart of Iowa for our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, is also with us, and she will share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages later this hour. Pat, you know, I was going to ask you, the swallows in general are really starting to gather up. I've got a lot more tree swallows than I do barn swallows. What are you seeing out there?
Well, I had a late nesting of barn swallows this year. In fact, four just fledged last week during our previous rainstorm. They were so happy to be on the wing. They were flying during the rain, which I could help but wonder. I don't think they were foraging because I don't think the mosquitoes are flying around in the rain. But they were sure loving it and enjoying the air of these rain showers that we've been needing so badly.
I know the group hangs on the utility wire just north of my place in the evenings, but they've been scooting across the prairie. And like I indicated, I've only got one pair of my normal. I usually have three pair. And I know some of these little buggers go Central America and points farther south. And perhaps some that were raised in my area just didn't return for some reason this year. Would you say that?
The barn swallows are definitely flocking with the other swallows. You know, there's rough-winged swallows and cliff swallows, and they're on 590th, just south of the Milford Township School. There's a kind of a flocking area that I've noticed the flock growing by 40 or 50 birds. It was up to about 200 birds yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that doesn't explain why the fewer nesters, but at least they're gathering. They're some of those first birds of that group that head south. So,
yeah.
With this rain, Pat, I don't know if you've noticed lately, but mosquitoes are starting to whisper in my ears. How about you?
Well, the other night I went out to take pictures of the full moon, and I noticed there were eight bats early on at dusk, or right about dark. But then they didn't linger. They didn't stay over the farmstead. So I kind of presume that they went to where they're foraging more mosquitoes. So I think it's the least mosquito impacts I've ever noticed in 28 years this year, probably because of the dry. But there are mosquitoes always. There's going to be some.
And recently it was noted that West Nile virus has been detected in Iowa. And our own KHOI's Mike Murphy had an opportunity to visit with Iowa State entomologist Dr. Ryan Smith about this story.
This is Mike Murphy here, and I have on the phone with me Dr. Ryan Smith. He's an entomologist with Iowa State, and he seems to be our local expert on West Nile viral disease. How are you, Dr. Smith?
I'm good, Mike. Thanks.
So, why is the disease called West Nile virus?
It has to do with a regional location as to where it was originally discovered. It actually came out of Uganda.
How did it get to the United States, and how long has it been here?
I believe West Nile was originally described, I think, in the 40s, and eventually found its way through parts of Africa into the Middle East. And it's believed, kind of like 1998, 99, that it actually made its way to the United States. We don't know the exact cause. Some people actually think it was due to the shipment of a flamingo that had brought the virus into the United States from a zoo in Israel to New York. Shortly thereafter, the mosquitoes in New York were kind of fed on this animal or animals, and eventually it became established in the United States. It spread all the way across the state, and now has become endemic, meaning that pretty much every year we have a certain level of West Nile virus activity here in the United States.
So there is a West Nile season, you might say?
Yeah, every year, the end of August, early September is always the peak of West Nile virus transmission, especially here in Iowa, but kind of throughout the United States.
It sounds like it may have been a bird that brought it here, but normally when we think of transmission of West Nile virus, we think of mosquitoes. Are mosquitoes the sole transmitter of the virus these days?
So West Nile is maintained in bird populations, but it is the mosquitoes that are the ones kind of amplifying this. And when they feed on an infected bird, they can potentially infect another bird, or in the case of a mosquito who is infected, they can also potentially feed on a human or other type of animal as well, kind of potentially putting them at risk, even though humans and horses, which are kind of also implicated here, they're actually what we refer to as dead-end hosts, meaning that if we become infected with the West Nile virus, it itself can't be further transmitted if we do receive another mosquito bite.
Are there many cases reported?
So far, for the state of Iowa, I'm only aware of 2 right now, but there usually is a bit of a delay before these can be fully validated and confirmed as cases. So there's always a bit of a lag time, and things have potentially changed, but this is, again, really the peak time, and we've seen a fair amount of increased activity of the virus in mosquito populations.
Is this something that's difficult to diagnose in humans, or is it pretty apparent?
West Nile virus can have a wide range of symptoms. So the vast majority of cases we can kind of dismiss as the flu. And it's, I think, a little confounding right now, even with the amount of COVID around, where, you know, if you're not feeling well, you might just kind of assume that it's the flu or potentially something else such as COVID. But in your more severe cases, but it's usually less about a percent of the actual people who become infected, it can actually cause swelling and inflammation in the central nervous system, in the brain. It is an encephalitis, so it can actually be very severe and does require hospitalization. And oftentimes people die as a result of West Nile virus.
Wow. And are there ways we can tell it's in our area besides reported human cases, or are there ways to detect its presence before the first person tests positive?
That's a great question. And obviously, when it comes to humans, it's a little bit harder to follow, and there's always going to be a lag. And really, the kind of standard for kind of West Nile virus surveillance is looking at mosquito populations. And this is something that has been done for a little over 20 years since West Nile virus first came to the United States. And it's something that I kind of run and maintain for the state of Iowa. And so we have several participants kind of scattered throughout the state. We're not obviously in every county, but we have traps running that are actively collecting mosquitoes. And then from those mosquitoes, we test them to see if they are positive or negative for the virus. And that gives us a good indication of what activity is in our mosquito and bird populations and whether there's a more impacted risk for West Nile virus transmission in the state.
I understand there are many varieties of mosquitoes. Do all these varieties transmit the disease, or are there certain ones?
Right, yeah. So West Nile virus is transmitted predominantly by Culex species. It's a certain type of mosquito, and even within the Culex, there are a few species that really are the main ones that are driving transmission. Here in Iowa, we have 2 species. One is Culex tarsalis, and the other is Culex pipiens that seem to really be the most important for driving human cases.
I understand the city of Ames is planning to resume fogging in the parks. Is the insecticide directed at the adult stage or larval stage of the mosquito, or do you know?
I can't speak to all the techniques that they are using, but any kind of fogging is there to target the adult mosquitoes. So these Culex mosquitoes are typically rest during the day and are active in the evenings. And so the fogging that at least the city of Ames does is kind of in those kind of twilight hours predominantly when these mosquitoes are active. So if they're out flying around, they can potentially come in contact with the insecticide, killing the adult stages. The larvae would have to be treated through other methods and means. And I believe that the city of Ames at least has taken measures to treat larval populations like that too. But it's really, it ultimately kind of comes down to removing standing water. And this is something that everyone can contribute to and kind of removing potential areas in which these mosquitoes might lay their eggs or where they might breed kind of in and around the home. And if you're able to do that, you kind of reduce the potential chances that you have adult mosquitoes in and around the home.
I see. Do you know what is used in the insecticide, and is that something we need to be concerned about?
I don't know the exact formulas that places like City of Ames or even some of the other cities that do any kind of fogging or spraying as to what they are using. I believe that they should be at levels that are relatively safe for any kind of human contact.
What about other insects that may serve other benefits to our community? Would they affect bees, for example? Or
sure. I mean, that is always a concern, and these insecticides are typically not specific to just mosquitoes and can have other kind of off-target effects. And so they can potentially come into contact with other insects, as you mentioned, such as bees, that could be beneficial. And so I think that any time that you do spray, it's something to take in mind. And, you know, especially if people have bee colonies and things like that, I think that these people should kind of at least report that they have these colonies going, such that any kind of contact with these insecticides doesn't jeopardize their colonies.
What can we as individuals do to mitigate our exposure to West Nile virus?
Again, I think it kind of starts with just taking some small steps around the home and kind of removing any standing water, whether that be, you know, just buckets or other objects, even children's toys that can collect any kind of storm water or rainwater. And these can serve as breeding sites. And if you can remove mosquitoes in and around the home, it kind of reduces the population that could potentially come into contact. Also, these mosquitoes are most active in the evening. So as the sun starts to go down, you're maybe outside. I would really recommend having kind of maybe long sleeve clothes. I know it's hard when it's warm, but at least using some kind of a repellent that contains DEET. That still is really the gold standard repellent out there, and using that can hopefully prevent any kind of bites that you may encounter.
So I've gotten a couple of mosquito bites this summer, and as soon as I heard about the presence of West Nile virus, of course, I got anxious with every one. Ballpark, what are the odds of any given mosquito bite containing West Nile?
Again, it's a very hard thing to kind of judge or quantify. When we look at our mosquito populations, we kind of come up with an estimate as to how many infected mosquitoes are out there. And so typically, at low levels of activity, this is maybe one per 1,000 mosquitoes. So the likelihood is pretty small. But again, if you are able to reduce the numbers of bites that you get on a regular basis, then your chances are much better that you won't have to worry about West Nile virus.
Do you suggest that people stay out of the woods or from walking on the prairie or along the river or just during twilight times, or do you have a take on that either way?
Well, I would still encourage people to, you know, go outside and enjoy the outdoors. I mean, oftentimes, if, you know, especially if people are doing these kind of activities during the day, you know, you really don't even have to worry about these Culex mosquitoes that might bite and transmit West Nile. They're more than likely going to encounter a different type of mosquito that are maybe active during the day. And so I think it's probably the best measure is just simply to be aware if you are going to be outside in the evenings and wear those repellents, wear protective clothing, and try to eliminate mosquitoes in and around the home. And that's really the best measures that we can really take to prevent potential transmission.
Is there anything that you want to share with our listeners that we haven't discussed?
Well, I think it's just something that West Nile is again here. It's something that really doesn't go away. It will be here every year. And even though it may not be grabbing the attention in the news right now, I think it's still something that should be on the minds of people as they do head outdoors.
When does West Nile season end? Is it first frost or is it before that? Or
so typically the kind of amount of activity in mosquito populations really dips once we get into October. And a lot of that has to do with the cold weather. And these mosquitoes also kind of go into a hibernation type state too. So in about a month left of having any real concern. So as we kind of move into the late summer, just something to keep in mind.
Oh, well, Dr. Ryan Smith, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to help our community stay abreast of this important health concern.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
And if you're just tuning in, I am Mike Metz along with Pat Schlerbaum and engineer Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael, for that all-inclusive and informative information that you had with Dr. Smith. Sounds like we can still enjoy the outdoors, just take those precautions and go about our activities. And if you are just joining us at 15 minutes after the hour, we are now going to join with Sam Wormley. And he's going to share some information about personal security and resources when it comes to computers and the internet. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, Mike.
So you teach a couple of OLLI classes. You are part of our KHOI staff as one of the volunteers, but you wear a lot of other hats. And like I say, you are an OLLI instructor. And some of those courses, which will be, I assume, coming up in the winter, involve computers. Can you briefly describe what they're about, and then maybe we can dive into some of the points?
Well, yes, Mike. First of all, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute is one of about 120 around the country, usually associated with universities. But the important thing is that these institutes are not restricted to university-type people. They're available to all of the public. Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Iowa State offers courses in the winter, in the spring, and in the fall. These courses are for seniors, and when I say seniors, I mean people that are 50 and older. But, you know, I don't think anybody's ever been carded to see what their actual age is. So in the wintertime, I usually teach three courses that are related to computer security. One is called Privacy When Using the Internet, another, Home Computer Security, and the third, which is probably the newest in the line of courses, is called Managing Your Digital Stuff. I want to let KHOI listeners know that the handouts and resources for these courses are freely available. And if they really want to look into the details of the courses, all they have to do is search on their computers for Classes Taught by Sam Wormley.
And that's pretty easy to get to because you maintain your own site. Like you say, most anybody can, if they can get to that site, have the luxury of being able to go through the information that you provide there. And to let our listeners know, you keep that updated. I know in the past you've mentioned that to various groups that you're always on the cutting edge, as it were, and trying to keep the latest information out there. Is that right?
That's right, Mike. I think it's important to try to educate the public about being safe on the internet, and it's well worth the time that I spend on it.
Well, let's delve into one of these units. How about home computer security? There's a number of questions I'm sure folks have about that. Can you give us some information, some high points in that particular course that you offer?
Yes, I've offered that course for 16 years now, and every year the emphasis changes a little bit. But really, our computers have gotten to the point where they're pretty secure, and it is our behavior. It's our behavior as users, which are the weak link. And so the course tends to address those things about behavior. Over the four-week course, I typically cover things like phishing. Phishing, spelled with a PH, is an attempt to get you as a user to behave in a certain way. They try to trick you into doing something that you shouldn't do. And the solution to that is do not respond to phishing. Ignore it and delete it. Another area that people need to concentrate on are their passwords. And by using a password manager, where you don't have to remember the passwords in your head, you can have strong, randomly generated, long passwords. You never have to know exactly what they are, because the password manager will take care of everything.
So what you're saying then is with password manager, you essentially only need to know the one password to get to that manager, and then it takes care of itself once you've entered your other passwords? Is that
right? Yes, that is exactly right, Mike. And there are commercial password managers, and there are typically password managers built right into the computers that we buy.
Oh, so you're saying that, for example, different computer brands, they have their own version of a password manager?
They do, if you want to divide it into two camps. You've got all of those that use Microsoft Windows, and all of those that use Apple products, and they both provide password managers.
Now, I have a password manager, as you know. I rely on another individual when I forget a password, but this may not be the best option. Is that correct?
Password manager, you would really like it to be a piece of software that automatically plugs in the passwords when you need them to log into an account somewhere. Password managers just make it convenient and also encourage safer password practices.
Okay. And speaking about passwords, we're talking about at least making the one that you would use to get to your manager a little more complicated as opposed to just 1234 or password or let me in, those types of things, correct?
Yeah, weak passwords tend to involve things like your birthday, your street address, your pet's names, things like that. You'd be better off by just having a phrase of three or four random words. That would be a pretty good password.
Okay. Well, let's move on to something we all treasure and value, and that's privacy, our individual privacy. How do you handle that?
Actually, I have a whole course about that, which is called Privacy When Using the Internet. But our privacy over the last 10 years has really been eroded. When you go search somewhere or go to a website, that information is being harvested. And it's being harvested and aggregated and sold to advertisers. And there are things that we can do about that. One of them is to block advertising and block trackers when you're on your browser, when you're on your Safari or Firefox or Chrome or whatever you happen to use. You can block those trackers. And another thing is to just be aware of not giving away any information about yourself. Don't say that you're going to be on a vacation for 2 weeks starting here and here. Keep that information private. You don't really need to tell people what your real birthday is. And just be cautious. Don't give away unnecessary information.
That sounds to me like you might not be the most positive advocate for some of these sites like Facebook, for example.
Well, yes. Social media is a place where we are encouraged to give away information, and we should resist that.
So if you, in fact, value your privacy, those are probably things that you want to avoid at all cost. Because inadvertently, even if you're thinking and trying to be secure, it's like loose lips sink ships, that old saying. Is that correct?
Wow, that goes back to, World War II? Yes. Okay. Another area, Mike, that people need to think about is how they connect to the Internet. Generally, if they have an Internet connection at home, that's considered secure and private. Also, if you're out with your cell phone, you're connecting to cell phone towers, that's all encrypted and private. It's when we go to public Wi-Fis that we have to take care. And the best solution to that is to subscribe to a virtual private network, which is abbreviated VPN. If you're on a public network and you use a VPN service, then all of the information going in and out of your device is encrypted, and you are basically hidden from where you really are. So nobody can steal information from you on a public network.
So the takeaway there is get your own VPN and don't rely on those when you're, say, sitting in a coffee shop or in a motel or a place like that, especially when you're traveling.
That's right. That's right. If you're going to connect to that coffee shop Wi-Fi or at an airport or a hotel, use your VPN.
Now, I know there's an airplane mode, for example, on your phone. So when you're traveling across country, you put it in the airplane mode. And is that related at all to VPN thinking, or are those two completely different things?
They're really two completely different things, Mike. Airplane mode just shuts off all of the radios, you know, the cell phone tower radio, the Wi-Fi connection radio, the Bluetooth radio. It shuts those off, and it's most useful to to comply with air travel. When you're traveling across the country in an airplane, being in the airplane mode or the airport mode shuts down your device. You can still listen to your music and read your book and do things like that, but you're not interfering with any of the electronics in the aircraft. So if you have a need to shut off those radios, as in air travel, that airplane mode takes care of that.
Okay.
The VPN, on the other hand, is what you want when you're connected to a public Wi-Fi.
Okay. So two different things, but again, it's a form of something you should be considering when traveling across the country, either having your own personal VPN for computer use or shutting down the towers so you don't interfere with things.
Let me be clear, Mike. If you're driving across, say, Nebraska or anywhere else, you really don't need to shut off your communication. All you're going to be doing is using the cell towers just in case you need to talk to somebody or they need to talk to you. So no point in using the airplane mode for that.
I mean, we're getting a little off track here, but when you go into airplane mode on the ground, does that in effect take away the ability for a 911 to try to locate you using your cell phone?
I believe that does. If you turn those radios off, you're essentially not connected.
Okay, so a safety measure when you're traveling on ground transport, it's probably best to keep yourself. Don't put it in airplane mode is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, put it in airplane mode when you're on an airplane.
There you go. I suppose that's why you call it airplane mode.
That's right.
Okay. All right. We always are concerned about losing data, information. What can you tell us about backups?
Backups are essential to make sure that you never lose your information. You may have very valuable correspondence with people or legal documents, tax documents, whatever. You don't want to lose those. And so by backing up, in other words, copying those files onto an external thumb drive or an external hard drive, that is what you want to do. And you'd like to have those be in a secure place in case, you know, in case you get hit by a tornado or your house burns down, or you don't want to lose your data. So backups are essential.
So there's a number of different ways you can do that, either an external, an additional, or an off-site area.
So you might copy onto your own devices and more than one, and take those to an off-site area, perhaps in a safe deposit box or in your basement or at a friend's house, something like that. But you save so much hassle by having a backup in case something happens to your computer. Maybe it gets stolen. Maybe it dies. The backup will save you a world of hurt.
Okay, Sam, we've only got about a minute or two left. How about keeping everything up to date? I assume, gosh, you buy a brand new computer, it's got the latest updates available. Do we need to take more precautions?
The one thing that can keep you safe more than any other thing is keeping your devices up to date. Keep the operating systems up to date. Keep the applications up to date. Keep any programs up to date. Do the updates. If you have that mantra, do the updates, that goes a long way toward keeping you safe.
Okay, Sam, we're essentially out of time this today. Is there anything that you want to add before we bid you adieu?
Well, I just hope that people take their privacy and their security seriously and really think about it and really implement good practices. That's the best advice I can give.
Thank you, Sam. Sam Wormley, OLLI instructor, member of KHOI's team. We'll see you again soon. He's also, you can hear him this afternoon on KHOI's Science Bites, co-hosts with me, 4:30 to 5.
Thank you.
And at 26 minutes before the hour, you are listening to Local Talk Tuesday. I am Mike Metz, along with Pat Schlierbaum and engineer Mike Murphy. And we'd like to now welcome Susan Guiazda, communications officer for the City of Ames. Hello, Susan.
Hello, it's great to be here. Wonderful to see the rain.
Yes. Creedence Clearwater Revival came on for us for this week, that's for sure. So, what have you got for us, Susan? What do you have to share with our listeners?
Oh, always so much going on. Just a reminder, Labor Day is coming up, so city offices, most city offices will be closed for Labor Day. We'll reopen the following Tuesday. Today is an unusual Tuesday as well. It is a city council workshop today. We have the climate action planning workshop tonight at 6 p.m., which is a little bit off schedule, but our consultant, Sustainable Solutions Group, are coming with us to the council meeting via teleconferencing, via Zoom. They are from Canada, and so they'll be with us via the miracle of technology. They will be Zooming in to our council meeting tonight at 6. If you'd like to watch that council meeting, you can do so via Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or web streaming from our City of Ames website. So lots of ways to watch the meeting. It should go about 2 hours, and it is the introduction to climate action planning. So I do anticipate there will be a lot of interest in this workshop, and it is kind of an overview, setting the stage for this 18-month process.
And this is an informational type of meeting for the public. There's no real public input. Is that correct?
There is no participatory part today. What they will explain is all the different engagement opportunities that will be coming up in the future. So this really is just a chance for them to share the plan. And not the climate action plan, but the plan to create the plan.
Okay. Sounds great. Okay. I see you have Liz Calhoun has joined us. She's the stormwater coordinator, I believe, or an analyst for the City of Ames. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, good morning.
It's good to see you. And as Susan alluded to, it's great to see the rain. How does that affect what you're doing?
Typically, on days like this, we get our boots on and go out and look at projects. So I'm prepared to do that if we get a little more rain. Sometimes we have to get out as it's raining or shortly thereafter to really see it. So we'll see if we get some more rain this morning.
Well, we're hoping so, because I know we're still quite a ways below what our normal yearly average is, and we need to do some catching up, because Pat was over to visit my prairie marsh the other day, and he was kicking dust up in it. So we need more, that's for sure. Liz, you have some details on rescheduling an event that had to be postponed. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so coming up September 30th, it's a Thursday evening, 7 o'clock, we're having a guest speaker come. His name is Chad Bergracki, and he's the founder of Living Lands and Water. And we're really excited to see Chad come. He's, for the past 25 years, he's been cleaning up the rivers, big rivers, Mississippi, the Missouri, the Ohio. He's gone out to Washington, D.C. So we're really excited to have him come speak. He's really motivational, and he's one of those kind of guys that doesn't take no for an answer. When people told him he can't clean up the rivers, he said, well, sure I can, and found a way to do it with barges and all kinds of volunteers, and so he's a great example of someone who's dedicated to the rivers.
Well, that's definitely the case. I know locally for many years, Jim Colbert, Dr. Colbert, had the Skunk River Navy. I know he was decommissioned recently in the last year or so, but I assume some folks have kind of taken up those reins locally. But can you tell us a little bit more about Chad's presentation?
Well, he's got a couple projects. One is the river cleanup, and he's also started a program of planting 1 million trees, and I'll be anxious to see if he's done that. What he found when he was cleaning up the rivers is that a lot of the rivers, the big rivers, had been cleared back when they were needed the wood for steamboats coming up the Mississippi. They cleared all the hardwoods out because they were really good to burn in those steamboats. And as a result, they lost all the mature hardwood trees. So he started, he saw a need and started a program there. So I'm excited to hear about that, if he touches base on it a little bit. And hear that he's just a great motivational speaker, so we're excited to have him come to Ames.
Okay, so once again, can you give us the info on when that's going to occur, that program?
So it's at the city auditorium on September 30th at 7 o'clock. And, yeah, it'll be live. We won't have it live streamed, but we may be able to have some video clips that we can show later on if you're not able to make it. But we encourage people to come out for that. And then as a follow-up on this Saturday, October 2nd, we do have a local stream cleanup. So after he motivates us, then we're going to get out there and do a little cleanup of our own.
Okay, that sounds great. And I know in the past, on some of those that I've helped on, there are some large objects that are difficult to take out of the riverbank, but somehow folks are able to figure out how to pry some of those things out, that's for sure.
Yeah, the few that I've been on, it becomes kind of a competition and lots of fun to see who can find the biggest thing and dig it out of there. And then the challenge becomes getting it out of the river valley and up to where you can haul it away.
Yeah.
So there's different aspects of it that, you know, take a little planning, and that's what we're working on right now.
And usually metal canoes are involved in that, because you certainly wouldn't want to use your fine cedar strip for that type of activity. But can you remember one of the most unusual things, perhaps, that you found on the times you were involved?
I was part of a group that found a motorcycle about 4 years ago when we were on the Skunk River. Someone had ditched a motorcycle in the river. So, yeah, it's amazing. You know, you wonder sometimes what people are thinking, but that's one thing. I found a street sign last June when we were on the College Creek through the university. There was a street sign in the College Creek, so there again, somebody just decided to pick it up off the street, off Lincoln Way, and throw it in the creek, I guess.
It wasn't a sign that said, don't cross when high water levels or something like that, right? Okay.
No.
Well, have you got anything else you can share with our listeners today?
Well, just one other thing. Between those 2 days, there is also a film festival. We're partnering with the Prairie Rivers of Iowa, a nonprofit here in town. We do a lot of work with them, and they have a film festival also in the city auditorium. So you can watch their website for details on that. And it's like a series of short films that will be aired that night about pollinators and rivers and just all about water and the rivers. So we're finishing up our Rivertown celebration of the year with this 3-day event, trying to educate people more about the rivers and get people involved.
That's great. And, you know, people don't have to wait for these particular events to become involved. Do you have a tip or two for those who might want to, say, if they're doing a river float, which right now is more a river shuffle as far as sliding a canoe or a craft down most of our waterways, but hopefully that'll change. Do you have any advice or tips for folks who might want to do some of this on their own?
Yeah, sure. That's great. We encourage people to get out there on their own schedule and just go out. Even if you're not on the river, just if you're in your neighborhood, if you see trash, the trash typically gets blown and then ends up in the river one way or the other, either through the storm drain system or just blowing overland. So we encourage people to take some, wear gloves and take a bag with you and just pick up what you can. It makes a huge difference if we all do our little part.
Yeah, that's one thing. When I'm out on trails, it seems like I always bring more out than when I carried in. Can't understand how somebody can take a full beverage container, and it, for some reason it must be heavier once they empty it and they deposit it, or at least some folks do.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anything else before we join our listeners with some other things?
No, I just encourage people to watch for more information, reminders about these events, and we'll be getting it out on social media, and hopefully we can get a good turnout. So I just thank you for having me on this morning.
Well, that's great. And that's stormwater analyst Liz Calhoun, and we want to thank you. And Susan, any last words?
Well, just one thing, Liz talking about the movie festival just made me remember we have our outdoor movie, the final outdoor movie of the summer season this weekend, with Hook being shown at the Banshell. So there's more details on our website about that. I just wanted to remind people we hadn't been able to do that in a while. It was very popular the last time we did an outdoor movie. It is a free family event. So join us at Hook this weekend at Banshell Park.
All right. And the Hook there, I think, might have something to do with the late Robin Williams and his performance, correct?
You're correct. That is a Robin Williams film. It's based loosely on a Peter Pan sequel and should be a lot of fun.
That sounds great. Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Liz. We'll touch base with you again real soon.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Oh, and it's Anna Banana Magnuson. How are you today?
Well, lots of great information. Got movie plans for the weekend, thanks to Local Talk. Need to change my password, thanks to Sam Wormley.
And you're given a great idea to improve your pickups as far as what you might find when you're walking Floyd.
Yes, exactly. Well, the other thing I just wanted to thank Sam. Don't tell any of the listeners, but I use the same password for everything, and I guess that's terrible.
Well,
you probably can announce it on Local Talk either. Well, let's get back to why I'm here, Anna Banana.
Well, so Anna, you need to know that you could use 1Password if you had that password manager.
Yeah, well, not right now the password manager is Anna, which is not doing so great. The poor Sam Wormley, I'm making him sweat. He's like, oh, dear. All right. Well, let's get to Tune In Tuesday, shall we? Let's not give all the listeners access to my top secret information. So, Mike Metz, let's start off with, what do you do if you rewatch a marathon? So what do you do if you rewatch a marathon?
I guess you watch a rerun.
Yes, that's right. Now, speaking of reruns, the Donna Law in the Kitchen will rerun a show from the fall of 2019. We'll hear the dynamic duo talk about prairie strips, conserve, heal the land, and fermentation. Now, their guest is someone named Omar de Coque Mercado, who is the STRIPS project coordinator and communications lead at Iowa State University. Now, STRIPS doesn't have anything to do with the strip club, so what does he do? He coordinates transdisciplinary research and extension activities on prairie strips and their impacts on farmland, farm livelihood, soil, water, and wildlife conservation. His expertise is in soil microbiology and science communication. You and Sam should like that. So what is this Donna Law in the Kitchen show? Donna Law in the Kitchen talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor. When? On Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. All right, Mike Metz. So the Donna Lana Kitchen Show is a repeat from 2019. And speaking of in 2019, I didn't jog. In 2020, I didn't jog. In 2021, I am not jogging. This is a running joke. Okay, seriously. Now, Mike, did you know anything about this local brewery who is trying to figure out who's been swimming in the vats of fermented apple juice? Have you heard about this on Local Talk?
Not fermented apple juice, no.
Go ahead. What did you hear?
Well, it was a vat of beer, and nobody. Well, I'll tell you that joke offline.
All right, that's censored for Local Talk listeners. But you know what? What I heard is about this local brewery who's trying to figure out who's been swimming in the vats of fermented apple juice, that they're fairly certain the culprit is an insider.
Oh.
Now, Now, what kind of insider information will we get from you and Sam Wormley today at 4:30 on Science Bite?
Well, I didn't tell Sam this until just now, and that is because of the thunderstorms that we've been experiencing here, I felt and I'd heard one or two folks want us to rebroadcast our program on thunder and lightning. And so they'll have to wait for our climate and wildfire talk for the following week. Thought it was appropriate, though. It just kind of dropped in on us like a raindrop.
Well, Mike, well, I went out in a thunderstorm carrying a metal pipe, and what happened next shocked me. But you won't be shocked to know that after listening to Science Bites at 4:30, you can tune in to listen to heart-to-heart messages when at 8:30 p.m. So, who will be my guest if you tune in tonight at 8:30?
Ben Franklin.
No. Hope O. Baker is the definition of a boss woman. She is a successful businesswoman growing her career in global partner management and a budding entrepreneur. Now, why she's coming on the heart-to-heart messages is because she is the international best-selling author of Finding Hope, which follows her journey of placing her newborn son in an open adoption and all the trials and tribulations that followed. She worked herself out of a deep depression, addiction, struggles, and is now thriving in life. She is a fierce advocate for birth mother rights, diversity, and women rights. She is the light you need and the woman you want in your corner through the good and bad, which is why I'm so honored and excited that she is our heart-to-heart messages guest today. Now, from what I shared about my guest, Mike Metz, what do you think I'll be playing during heart-to-heart messages as the music breaks?
Oh, I know.
Love is a many splendid thing.
Oh, dear. And is that right? But you'll have to find out what we're playing on heart-to-heart messages by tuning in tonight at 8:30 p.m. Now, Mike Murphy.
Yes.
Do you know what is a farmer's favorite Bruce Springsteen song?
A farmer's favorite Bruce Springsteen song? Corn in the USA?
Well, close. Born in the USDA.
Ah.
So will we hear any Bruce Springsteen songs on You Name It this Thursday, skipping forward?
You actually hit it this week. There will be some Bruce Springsteen this week. As we're approaching Labor Day weekend, the theme of our show this week will be Workers of the World Unite in Song. So great songs about labor and great songs about working folks and jobs and things like that.
Awesome. And so that is Thursday at 1 in the morning?
It's Thursday at 2 p.m. by my calculation.
I'll channel my Sam and Mike Science Bites by my calculation. So listen to You Name It this Thursday at 2 p.m. Now, Pat Salburn, we don't want to leave you out of the mix. I know you're out there at the studio. So what did the dad say to the son who loved canning when he asked if he could go to the fermentation festival?
Well, gee, I need to learn more. What is it?
Well, the dad said to the son who loved canning and wanted to go to the fermentation festival, he said, you can go as long as you don't get pickled.
Oh, okay.
Now, Pat, one more for you on the pickle theme. How do pickles enjoy a day out?
Pickles enjoy a day out by, I got nothing. What is it?
Okay. Well, they relish every single moment of the day out.
Oh, let's relish this moment. Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Absolutely. So if you want to relish every moment with every program on KHOI, you tune in to listen to great programming like All Things Piano with Tom Russell this morning after Local Talk. The Donna Lana Kitchen Show will give us, that was a repeat. Oh, I'm repeating myself. It is a rerun. You Name It, Community Bookshelf, heart-to-heart messages, and Science Bites, to just name a few of your listening options to make your day a great one. Now, this woman, Mike Metz, Del Cliff submitted one of the top 10 jokes of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival 2019. Again, going back to 2019, because that's a repeat for Donna Lana Coaching Show for 2019. So this joke in 2019 won the top 10. I accidentally booked myself onto an escapology course. I'm really struggling to get out of it. Now, I'm not going to get out of this, and to help you escape from my bad jokes, I'm turning the show back over to Mike Metz. Back to you, Mike.
Oh, I don't know if I should thank you for that one, Anna, but thank you, Anna. That was interesting.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. The program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg. A tip of the chapeau to engineer Mike Murphy. We heard from Drs. Ryan Smith, Sam Wormley, and as always, Susan Guiazda and Liz Calhoun. You can also hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Our website is khoifm.org. Consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station. With your financial support, go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Yeah, and our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
we'll see you again on the radio.